Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And you know that love letters are to anybody at any time for absolutely any reason that you have something nice to say. Some people write them still, some people don't, but everybody has some lurking in their hearts, and this I know. And today's guest, we'll see what's lurking in her heart, is Sheena Metal of LA Talk, the Sheena Metal Experience.
Right.
Yes.
LA Talk Radio.
LA Talk Radio. Thank you. And I'm just going to go right to you because your name alone is interesting enough to ask about.
Okay.
How did you become Sheena Metal?
When I was 20, my best friend from high school used to follow me around and make me do characters. So he could play the audio bits and then the video bits once he got a camera for his huge Mexican family at their big parties. And we sat down and talked about the different characters and with another friend of mine who was a makeup artist, and I decided to do a one-woman show of all my characters. And when I started sending out headshots and resumes and auditions as an actor, I would send out little snippets of the characters,
mm-hmm.
and I kept getting asked to be Sheena Metal on people's public access shows.
But why that name?
I just wanted a rock and roll character. Like a fun
yes. All right. So
rock
that was
and roll character. And then I did enough guest spots on access shows. I decided to create my own show. I thought Sheena would be a fun character. I just moved to the San Fernando Valley, and she was based in Reseda.
Oh.
And I wrote a show with a bunch of characters, and I did it for 5 years, and it became very successful. And because public access was sort of the land of crazy, kooky people,
mm-hmm.
people assumed that I was Sheena, and I was a real person.
I see. Okay. So can we hold our horses a little bit and back up?
Sure.
Because this started when you were 20. What about you before? What kind of a kid were you? What kind of a little girl?
I was a quiet kid. We always moved. I lived in four states by the time I was 13.
Because of work?
My father's work. He got transferred. He was a design engineer for Brunswick Corporation.
Ah.
Born in New Haven. We moved to Chicago when I was 5. We moved to Baltimore when I was 9. And when I was 13, we moved to Huntington Beach, California.
Was that hard?
Oh, it was awful.
I would think.
It was awful.
Yeah.
But it set me up to be in this business, which is nomadic and gypsy-like.
I see. Okay.
And didn't have a lot of family. My father didn't really like his. My mother was an orphan who had sort of a disenfranchised adopted family and an even more disenfranchised birth family. So it was really just he worked all the time, and it was just she and I, and we had great adventures together, and she mm-hmm. loved the arts.
Are you a single child?
I am.
Mm-hmm.
She's my only relative. And I was convinced that I was going to be a doctor until once, to stop me from being bored, my mother gave me her album set of Gilbert and Sullivan's HMS Pinafore.
Oh, my.
And I got halfway through Buttercup, and that was it. I was hooked for life.
Okay.
So
I thought you were going to say that you saw somebody cut and bleeding, and you just knew you couldn't do it.
Oh, I didn't like the battle scene from Gone with the Wind with all the amputations. That was my first thinking, I'm going to have to amputate things.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing was Gilbert and Sullivan, and that
so
was
what,
it.
How old were you when you heard that?
5.
And so what did you do next?
I was lucky that by then my mother had already suggested that I take guitar. I was already in guitar. She was very musical and wished she had been more so. And I really wanted to be an actor, and I think she really wanted me to be a musician.
Oh, so you had encouragement.
Oh, fantastic.
So you were in a vacuum
mother.
Here.
Still.
Oh, good.
Still encouraging, always.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to, I took guitar, piano, clarinet, drums, and then I got to take drama because that's what I wanted to take. And I played instruments until I was in high school. I fell in love with musical theater, and then that was the end of everything but theater. So
what did you do in high school in performances? I mean, you're smiling all the way through this, so
yeah.
I'm guessing it was a journey you
art.
Liked.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Okay.
I was in 2 theater classes, and then my last year I also taught. I was a student teacher for 2 theater classes. I was in a jazz vocal ensemble, a concert choir, a harmonious group.
So you actually sing?
Yeah.
Nice.
A little bit.
So you've gone really from success to success to success.
Well, I was lucky that I was...
I mean, emotionally...
I was lucky that I was good at it. I was doubly lucky,
mm-hmm.
Which I will now probably turn to like sextuply lucky. I'm lucky that I was good at it. I'm lucky that my mother was supportive. I'm lucky that it's easy for me to memorize lines.
Oh, good.
I'm lucky that I don't get stage fright. And I'm lucky that I sleep.
And you can add one more to that. You're lucky that you realize how fortunate you are.
Oh, absolutely.
You know how many people have it all and they...
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I can never be out of a place of gratitude because I've just been lucky thing after lucky thing after lucky thing.
It feels like that talking to you. Yeah. What was the hardest thing you ever had to do?
Oh,
I mean, maybe there wasn't one.
Yeah. Yes. Realize that for some people, it's just business. Realize that just because you're involved in an artistic project with people doesn't mean they're your family. Realizing that for some people, it's not about community.
So there were disappointments in that.
Oh, there's still disappointments.
Yeah.
Realizing that not everybody was raised by my mother and didn't have the same approach to everything. But I'm tougher, and I've been in this business since I was five, so 43
almost,
years.
Yes. Okay.
So I've learned to toughen up, and I've learned that sometimes business is just business, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned to focus on the things that are wonderful and make me happy.
Okay, so what are the things that really make you happy? We were talking before, and you referred to a couple of people who are helpful to you, and you described them as linear.
Right.
Being able to think, and I can
I'm
see.
I'm not very linear.
I got that from you were so glad that they were. What does that mean to you?
I was a very myopic, focused, linear type A Aries. And when I was two weeks shy of 24, 3 days after I crossed escrow on my house, I was in a freeway accident on the 405 freeway.
Oh, my goodness.
And amongst other things, suffered a head injury, had a near-death experience, and came back. And I don't know if it was the NDE and seeing
home. What
does
that mean?
A near-death experience. Seeing home and coming back, or if it was the head injury. But I immediately became no longer a line thinker and more of a circle thinker, which I think has made me a better person and I think makes me better to do a project with. But I'm not real good with dates and time.
Well,
and
maybe that somehow caused you to be more who you are.
I hope.
I mean, not necessarily better or worse, but
yeah.
You know,
but I mean, I used to be a person that balanced my checkbook to the penny.
Oh,
now
I
just give it to somebody else because I just can't. Again.
Oh, but you give it to somebody you trust, you still get it done.
I do. I'm lucky.
Okay.
I have wonderful people that work with me, and they're all magic, and they have beautiful skill sets that I don't have, and I'm very fortunate. It's just really the.
And what a compliment to them that you give them that you acknowledge that too.
Well, I hope they know that they're my family.
Yes.
That they really are my family and that I couldn't do what I do without them.
Oh, I see a love letter coming. But I'm a little ahead of myself. Oh, goody. Okay.
Leonard, my assistant, I love you.
Oh, my goodness.
Because
okay.
you know, you're not an island.
We're going to talk about that.
You can't do things on your own. You need other people.
Yes.
And the more you realize that, the faster you realize that, the better off that you are. And I'm the original little red hen who's had to give that up. And
what does that mean, the original
little red hen? I'll do it myself.
Oh, yes. Okay. I forgot about that.
It took me a while to realize that I need help. I'm too busy and I need help. And it's okay to ask for help. That was something just this year.
Good for you.
That they've been working with me.
Good. And before that, you just took it all on yourself?
Yeah. They would help out on different projects, like when I direct the Vagina Monologues or when I'm involved in something that's big production.
Okay. So talk about some of the things that you've done. Because I've seen some of the posters because I don't live here.
Okay.
And I see them, and I wish I could come to them, and I can't. But talk about some of the plays you've done. And
I do a monthly night at the Hollywood Improv.
Mm-hmm.
I host a comedy night 2 months, and on the third month, I broadcast my Sheena Metal Experience, my daily show from there with celebrity guests.
You say you host. You ask other people to join you at the microphone?
Yeah. On my show at LA Talk Radio, I do hour interviews. At the Improv, we do 15 minutes. I have six guests per show. And I pick out celebrities that I think it would be fun for people to meet. And we do a red carpet and a meet and greet afterwards, red carpet before. And it's fun to broadcast the show in front of a crowd of 200, which is wonderful. For 3 years, I've been on the board of directors for Ensemble Studio Theater Los Angeles. This year, they made me an artistic director. I love that. For them, I direct a charity production of the Vagina Monologues every year with about 100 actresses total.
I've never seen it.
Well,
so
every night
know.
I do it, I triple cast it.
I see, okay.
So I can use more actresses that have been on the show. And it's everything from people from bands to comics to actresses to politicians to writers. I mean, I use all different kinds of people.
I have a personal question that I'm really interested in, and I don't know if you can answer it, and I don't know if I'm going to embarrass you in any way.
You're not going to embarrass me.
But what is it that you offer to people that make them want to come do this all with you?
Well, that's a charity show,
because
so it's sure not money.
Love. Well, no, I'm asking you because
community?
Apparently
family?
People respond to your...
I think they know a couple things. I think they know that it's going to be a good product.
Mm-hmm.
I think they know that it's going to be packed. We always sell out. I've done 15 or 16 performances of it. All the ones I've directed have sold out. I think that they know it's going to be fun. We're going to feed them well. everyone's going to be friendly to them. If they park far away, they're going to be walked to their car.
Okay, so I was just going to say
there's going to be love.
Trust and safety.
Trust and love and family. They're going to meet other friends there. They're going to meet other women there. So that always happens. I love the success stories of so-and-so and I became friends because we met backstage at the monologues. And it is for a good cause. And it's just, it's love. I do everything from a place of love. I don't know how else to be. So that's why I think. I'm writing a web series. And I've asked a lot of people to be in it for next year.
What is a web series?
It's an independent television show.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm writing it and I'm in it. And it's going to be a season, 10 episodes, 10 to 15 minutes an episode. And I've just been writing for people and then saying, I wrote this character for you. Do you want it?
Ah, so that's big. I mean, people want to be acknowledged and recognized and appreciated.
And I have about 25 in the cast and no one has even seen a word. And they've just said yes. And I always think I must be doing something right.
Isn't that your favorite word? Yes.
Yes, it's my favorite word.
Me too.
There must be, I must have done something right that these wonderful people who've worked their whole lives.
Well, clearly you have. I was just curious if you could put your finger on it or.
I think it's good product, good audience. I make people feel loved.
Yes.
That's all you need.
I think that's what.
That's all performers want.
Yeah.
They want a good audience. They want good material. Whether I read it or not, I certainly provide it. And they want to know that they're.
Oh, so you make, I mean, what I think is important, excuse me, what really makes me happy is letting other people shine.
Yeah,
that's what you do.
Absolutely. Yes. And in this case, with the web series, I'm writing for each actor.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote a part for them that I think they will be amazing in. And
they haven't seen it yet.
No one's seen a word. They don't seem to care.
Yeah.
Which is magic.
Yes.
I don't know how that happened. But then again, more of my luck and good fortune, which I just
seem to be full. And so most of your days is working?
Oh, I mean, all the time. I don't even know how to. What is not working?
Well, I don't know myself, but
my work is all fun.
Yes,
I work with my friends. People ask me if I have a social life. I don't even know what that means. I mean, when I'm with friends and we socialize, we talk about work and art, and we go see somebody's. We get together and go see somebody's play, or we all get together and go see a friend's comedy. I don't know how to separate the two. Maybe that's why I'm single.
Oh, well, that's we could talk about that, but you know that how to separate the two. Is why bother?
Yes.
Because I think some of our closest friendships come through work.
Sure.
Those are the people you spend hours a day with.
Yes.
Those are your actual mates.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's, work relationships are important. How many, I mean, I've had the experience and seen that sometimes you are brought together by the work.
Yeah.
And then when you no longer have that, the friendship kind of fades because the glue was the work.
Right.
So the difference between situational friendships and core relationships still
exists. Depends on how it goes. Or sometimes it takes 5 years to build a friendship.
Yes.
A lot of my friends were child actors when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And something about the nature of this business when they were so young, they've been through all the hustlers and the con artists and the people that just wanted to be near them for who they were. And they have a lot of filter, and they don't necessarily want to become your best friend in five minutes, which is fine with me.
Yeah.
But I kind of always have a feeling when somebody comes in to the show for the first time, if that's going to be somebody I'm going to wind up having a friendship with outside of the show. Or some people just come and do the show again and again, and I love them. I consider everybody who's done my radio show my family.
Yes.
But we don't become close outside of the show, and they're just my radio family, and that's okay, too.
And somehow they can crawl right into your heart through your work.
Yeah, and I'll always protect them. And when I see them on a TV show or I see them in a play, I feel like that's somebody I've known my whole life. But we don't necessarily become friends that socialize because they're just not, that's not the right connection.
Now, do people kind of get on you as a single woman to do something about that?
About not being a single woman?
Yeah.
Well.
Because you said something on Facebook that made me laugh and I forget what it was.
About not wanting to get married?
No, about people wanting you to be.
Oh, God. Yeah, I was in 2 5s and a 10 and a 12-year relationship.
Oh.
Back to back almost.
Mm-hmm.
So I think from the time I was 16 until the time I was 46,
mm-hmm.
I was single maybe 2 years combined.
Oh, so
probably
that's not so
that
single.
Much.
Yeah.
So I've been single for almost 2 years now,
mm-hmm.
and with a couple, with an exception or two. And, well, I haven't been in a relationship, but I've dated a little bit.
Okay.
And, I'm okay with it, but other people are freaked out by it. And I want to go really, really slow the next time. And I find that makes people very uncomfortable not anybody that I was dating, but it makes people like, well, how long until, when is this going to, what's going on? You're not getting any younger. And it's, there's a lot of societal pressure to be in a relationship.
What do you think that stems from in modern times, where what do we really need it for if we don't want it?
No, I just think that people in our society, in this country, I've never lived in another country, in the United States, people think that you're validated by having a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I understand why I dated all the people I dated, and one of them, he is now one of my very best friends.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, once in a while you get one of those. We were together 10 years, and I love him like he's my family. But none of them were my person. None of them should have been my, none of them I should have been with that long.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we just are taught that to be validated as humans, we need to be in a relationship.
Or do your friends want to see you safe? And that is their picture of,
no,
you're safe if you have somebody to look after you?
Well, I'm sure that's part
know.
Of it.
Yeah.
I just think that people think you can't be happy if you're not with somebody. And
does your mother have a say in this?
No.
I mean,
no.
Does she have a feeling about?
No.
Oh, nice.
No. I think she thinks that I settled too much before and got in relationships just to be in them. No, she's pretty mellow. She doesn't like one of those moms that was always telling you what to do.
Nice.
And if anything, she got married and didn't really want to, and then it wasn't a good marriage, but she chose to stay with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she was always like, oh, don't do it till it's right. Just don't get married.
Mm-hmm.
So I've managed to not get married, so I did that right. I don't know that I believe in marriage. I don't think that maybe love and marriage belong together.
I think that there's a lot of that now.
Yeah.
People, you know.
Yeah.
You don't need to be married for the reasons you used to be married. I can't remember first of all, people wouldn't have children unless they were married.
Sure. And I don't have children, or that would be a different story. But I don't need to get a license from the government in order to know that I'm in love with someone.
Yeah.
So, well, we'll see.
So you're easy about it. It's nice.
Yeah.
Okay. There's something about ending up friends with somebody that you were in a romantic relationship that is really nice.
Yeah, it works. It works beautifully.
Does he live in the same area that
you
do?
Yeah, he lives about a half a block from me.
Oh, nice. Okay.
He and I, and we have a band, and those songs are our children.
Oh, tell me about this, because you mentioned the word band before, and I asked you if...
We have when I first started promoting music as a way to promote my first TV show.
Oh, and what was that?
That was called Sheena Metal's Freakin' Rock Review, and that was the public access show that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that almost every night one of the bands didn't show up because, you know, artists can be flaky. So one day he said to me, well, why don't we just have a band so in case someone doesn't show up, we'll get up there and play. I had a couple of actors
in my
cast.
And you played guitar and sang.
I just sang. He plays guitar.
Okay.
And I had a couple of actors. Then we wrote some songs. I write lyrics and he writes music. And we started to try to train some actors that were in the cast. And it was going very slow. And then some friends of mine called up and they said, we're headlining the Coconut Teaser in 3 weeks. And we're showcasing for Atlantic Records. And you had mentioned to us that you had a band. Do you want the 10 o'clock slot on Friday night? Which, you know, most bands work years to get.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I don't know what in the world to do now. So I called up my friend Robbie Rist, who as a child was on the Brady Bunch. And he had a band that was the house band on my TV show. And I said, I don't know what to do. And he's like, oh, the guys in my band will just be your band. And they wore costumes. We had 4 rehearsals and we went and did the show. And I thought, well, I'll invite some people. And if nobody likes it, I'll never do it again. So I invited some people, old school. There was no internet then. And 150 people showed up.
Wow.
And I thought, well, when it stops being fun, I'll stop doing it. And that was 21 years ago. Never stopped being fun, but I have gotten so busy that we've had to take breaks.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot to put it together and you get busy. But Colin,
listening to you talk about life is so nice because there are no, I won't say there are no glitches, but you're accepting.
Sure.
You're smooth. You just go.
You just throw it out there and see what happens.
Okay. I want to ask because I am so much about letters.
Okay.
And you have such affection for so many people.
I do.
You talk about love a lot.
Yeah.
So it's not that, and you're smiling, and
it's
I see,
everything.
This is why I need a TV
everything
moment.
Everything breaks
because,
down to love.
Yes, I think that's really true. And feeling safe and secure in that love, and feeling valuable, and feeling attractive in a million ways from center.
Sure.
Yes. So you are busy, mm-hmm. and I have a feeling you don't have time to sit down and write letters.
No.
And
email sometimes.
That's nice.
That's writing a letter.
But do you ever have like 10 minutes at the end of the day when you're just unwinding. There's something about, you were talking about the people you love so much who were like family to you, who took care of things in your life that you needed doing.
Yeah.
And I think you said, I just love them.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just curious, does it sound at all appealing to you? And if it doesn't, it doesn't. That's okay. But just to talk about it, to sit down and take a piece of paper and a ballpoint pen and just write 3 lines. Like, I've been thinking about how much you mean to me, and you do so much for me. I just want to go on record and let you know how much I love you. Signed, your name, in an envelope. How long does that take?
Oh, I could do that.
And I'll tell you.
Is this the Love Letters Live Challenge?
Yes. It's better than a bucket of ice water on your head, right?
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you that it doesn't take long. And when people get those, it's like you have dropped a bag of emeralds on their front door, especially today. But the main thing is you can't reread a phone call. And as we go through life, it is really nice to be able to reread something. If you're having a time where you're feeling a little crummy about yourself, or things aren't going right, and you find one of these old letters, and you get to see again that somebody felt that way. And I'm not even talking about you. Never mind how fun it is for you to bathe in the positive for a couple of minutes. For somebody else,
sure.
It's just a gift.
Sure. Yeah,
so
I'll do that for you.
I mean, okay, do it for me, and then let me know how it felt.
I will. I'll do
okay.
it for you.
So, I mean, just who would you, what about your mother? Now, I know how close you are.
Yeah, she's the closest person in the world to me, and always has been. Yeah.
Let me tell you, I wrote one to my mother, and I just decided, you know, the thing about a love letter, and you've got so much positive with her, the thing about a love letter is you don't even have to feel so much, you don't have to have a perfect relationship to write a really gorgeous love letter.
Sure.
And by the way, love letter is just any truth you put to paper with compassion and nicely. We've had people write them to pets, to their businesses. I did a workshop with 5-year-olds, and one little boy said, can I write a love letter to air? Oh, you bet he can and should, because I said, where would you be without it? You should. Okay.
Exactly. I don't know where to send it.
So,
I should throw it up in the air.
Oh, well, that's a whole other thing.
Gets it. Yeah.
You could always send it someplace, including to yourself.
Yeah.
Sure. I had one woman wrote a love letter to the man, her future husband. She doesn't know who she is. She doesn't know anything, but she wanted to write to him to tell him how wonderful she knows he is, and for all the reasons, specifics, because you're so special, doesn't mean anything. And she wrote this love letter, and then what to do with it? I said, you mail it to him, my future, and you mail it to him at your address, and you just hold on to it till you meet him someday, and then give it to him.
Hmm.
There's just so many creative things to do. But so I wrote this letter to my mother, and every time, she was probably about 92, 93 when I wrote it. And every time I would come down there to visit her, she would hold up this letter. She did this for like maybe 3 years. She lived till she was 96. She'd hold up this letter and she'd say, I just read this and it's just wonderful. I just read your letter and it's just, now you would think maybe she's losing it and she forgot that she read it before. Or she's repeating herself. No. She read it again and again, and every time she read it, it was like it was new love coming through the... really is amazing.
That's beautiful.
Thank you for listening to
me. I'll write my mom one tonight.
Okay. And, you know, those are the ones that you find in a book or in a pocket or in a nightgown. You find those after people are gone. It's what they're holding on to.
Yeah.
Do you ever take... what about photographs?
Yeah.
Are you big on...
I'm big on them. I have to be for work.
Yeah.
I'm not... I grew up with a mother who thought her soul was being stolen if she took a picture.
Oh, tell me about that. What culture did that come from?
She just always hated pictures. She's always been
that. Mine did too. How was yours raised?
My grandfather was a photographer.
Uh-huh.
My adopted grandfather. So there certainly was lots of pictures.
But what was your mother's cultural petri dish?
Yeah, Irish. Irish, poor ghetto Irish from Kentucky.
But is that something that's Irish culture?
No,
or is that a permanent?
Irish thing that I always talk about, there's a very thin line for the Irish because you're supposed to have enormous pride,
mm-hmm.
but you're never supposed to be proud.
Oh, yes.
And there's such a fine line between having pride and being proud. I always say it's like that little tunnel that Luke Skywalker had to fly
mm-hmm.
in to blow up the Death Star.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're supposed to be, oh, I'm so proud to be Irish and proud of this and proud of that, but you're not ever supposed to brag.
But, and you're not, that's right, because that'll bring the evil eye down on you very
right.
quickly. but also that not making yourself the center of the universe.
Yes.
There's something about that. You know who does that so well? Is the guy who plays Jack on Will and Grace.
Yeah.
He is just, brilliant at being the center of the universe.
Yeah.
And it just cracks me up. There's something about...
Yeah, and I think that's been a struggle for me in this business, where you kind of have to be your own storefront.
Yeah.
But I'm always checking myself to make sure I'm not bragging or
talking too much about me. Oh, okay, so let's talk about bragging for a minute. Sometimes bragging, because that's an interesting point, and I feel very strongly that we have to make the fine line between bragging and letting people know what we do well so they can count on us.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's a gift to say what you're really good at. And it's a way of saying, you can trust me. Like, that's why people trust you, maybe, because you're clear about what you're good at.
Yeah, you have to own what you're good at and not be a bragger.
Right.
And so I just have to trust my instincts that it's right when it's right and wrong when it's wrong.
I bet it is.
And just hope I don't come off seeming like some...
Well, I've known you for half an hour now, and you certainly don't come off seeming...
some industry weirdo who talks about themselves all the time.
Right.
Because that doesn't interest me. But I'm interested in doing my part in the universe and being the person I'm supposed to be in service to the universe. I'm not interested in it all being about me. It's more than enough about me.
Okay, so I see, and someday when you're an old woman, maybe you'll do this, but I see a love letter to yourself.
Oh, I probably could use one just about now.
Then you should.
I should.
Just all these things that you just said.
Yeah.
Mail them to yourself. I mean, mail them and get them in the mail, and then you'll see that the you who wrote it and the you who are reading it are two different people.
Yeah.
And then you stick it in some treasure box and let someone else find it in 100 years.
Oh, I like that.
And you'll be, because you are a part of entertainment history.
Well, just a little tiny part.
Just a little tiny part, but somebody's going to find it and get a wonderful PhD thesis out of it in the theater department.
I like that story. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for doing this with me.
Well, it's my pleasure. I love doing this with you.
Thank you.
Am I done?
Yeah, if you want to be.
No, I don't want to be. Are we done?
No, talk some more.
Okay, I'm going to tell you a story. When you said that, I thought, oh, is that my... Well, thank you. You can find me.
No, that's just midstream gratitude.
I've been going through something this summer, in addition to my mother being sick, and I had offered to sit in with a friend here after my show, and I was just flat out sad.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting there knowing I had another hour and a half to do of her show, and I just wanted to crawl in a circle and bawl and cry. And so I wrote a little text that just thanked somebody for their friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And I started sending it to everybody that I knew in my phone. And I probably sent 125 out that night, and I kept getting things back.
Mm-hmm.
And it healed me.
Yes.
There's something amazing about just saying I love you.
Yes.
And sending it to somebody. And even people that I thought, do I know this person well enough? Should I just send it? I thought, screw it. I'm just going to send it. And it was this magic of people coming out of the woodwork and saying, I haven't seen you in a year. I bought tickets for Friday night. Let's go to a thing, or let's just go eat, or let's do this. And all because of this little 3-line text that I wrote.
That's right.
And sent to everybody that said, you mean a lot to me. Thank you for your friendship. I just wanted to know how important you are in my life. And that was it.
And that's how Love Letters Live has just become the Sheena Metal Experience. Yes. Right on the head, that nail you got. Exactly right. And I'll tell you that if you ever have the energy in the handwriting you say you don't have to do a couple of those in an envelope and send it.
I will.
It's a whole other level. Will you let me know how that works out someday?
I will. Okay. I will absolutely tell you how that works out.
Yeah.
We'll do
that's
a follow-up
that's
show.
A good story.
Yeah.
I like those. I mean, I have got stories about found letters. And, you know, I've noticed also, in general in life, sometimes you invite somebody to do something, like you do for your theater or whatever, or I do in my life, and people don't say, how did you get my name? Or what makes you think I can do this? Because I think most of us feel at some level that we are worthwhile.
Yeah.
And all that you're doing is bringing that to the surface. Why would they question, I love you?
Yeah.
Very few people, I think, will question, I love you.
Well, definitely not people in my life. I'm shocked. I had a friend tell me
once. I'm so glad you had that experience.
Oh, well,
Sheena Metal experience.
And just recently, just last week, I had a friend tell me once, people don't know what to do with you because you say I love you so quickly. But I just, when I think it, I say it. That's just.
And that's what love letters is about.
Yeah.
When you feel it, how nice to just jot it down. You texted it. That's great. But share it. Let me say this way. Gratitude taken to the grave serves no one.
No, it's true.
What a waste of time that is.
It's beautiful. What a joy to be here with you.
Thank you. Ditto.
Fantastic. Let's do this again.
Fabulous.
I would love it. Let's do it for sure again.
I don't usually kiss on the radio, but
I
couldn't resist.
Me.
Well, thank you for doing this. And until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye. I'll talk to you later. But I also want to say, as you can see, if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is that. I am pointing at you. I'm pointing at everybody. You're the one sitting here. Writing a love letter is a special occasion.
Absolutely.
And it can be short. And never mind that you don't like your handwriting. It's yours.
Yeah.
By the way, I had, and that's never a reason not to write a love letter because my handwriting's so bad. I got a very sweet kind of a love letter of gratitude for a dinner party from a man I had never had over before. And he wrote a beautiful little letter. And I want to tell you, I can read anything at this stage of my life. And I couldn't read one word he said. It was absolutely illegible to me.
Wow.
I mean, I could be a code breaker. I couldn't read anything.
Well, when you get a love letter from somebody who has handwriting like a doctor.
He is a doctor.
Who's five and also a serial killer. You know it's coming from me.
Okay, good. I'm going to look forward to it. But what I want to tell you is he did the cleverest thing. He knew that it was totally illegible. And he typed out the same message on a piece of paper and clipped it to it.
Good for him.
There's always a way.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you, honey.
Thank you, my friend.
I'll see you another time.
You bet. Absolutely.
Okay.
I'll be back.
So for everybody, ta-ta. Talk to you later.